What's up, everybody? Welcome to SWAT MMA, where we're smoking weed and we're talking mixed martial arts. My name is Jared. I'm here with Paul.
What up?
This is episode number 103, and today we are going to be smoking and talking all about the UFC, Bellator's 261, PFL 6. We're going to talk about boxing, including the Gervonta Davis versus Barros fight, Vasily Lomachenko's return to the ring, and the upcoming BKFC Bare Knuckle 18. Before we dive into all that combat sports action, though, let's get into the weed of the week.
Smoke weed every day.
This week, Paul and I are smoking on one kind of flower and one kind of wax. You can hear Paul coughing in the background there from the Puffco. You all right?
I'll be okay.
Got the Tropicana cookies once again. That's Girl Scout cookies crossed with tangy. It does have a nice kind of fruit flavor. Although, honestly, I don't notice a lot of differences in strains when it comes to concentrates. Do you?
Just depending on terpene profile, yeah.
Yeah.
But other than that, like... Not necessarily, no.
Not as much as the weed. Like, I know when I'm smoking Tropicana cookies, the flower, because it's got a very distinct orange flavor.
I'd say, like, it depends on the wax. So, like, if you're, like, talking, like, rosin or, like that, like, yeah, you can taste the flavor on that. But, like, if it's just, like, shattered or, like diamonds, it could be different.
Mm-hmm.
And then also diamonds, like, if you have terpenes. Well,
diamonds, it's cooked off, yeah.
Well, and the same thing, like, some of them are put in sauce, though. So, like, mm-hmm. Sometimes you can still get that terpene profile.
That's my favorite, when they put the diamonds in the sauce.
Yeah. It's a good time.
It is. And our weed today, our flower, we're smoking on a new one for us. This is Chernobyl. Chernobyl's a three-way cross of Trainwreck, Jack the Ripper, and Trinity. We'll break that down just a little bit. Trainwreck is, of course, a standby classic in cannabis. It is a blend of Mexican and Thai sativas that were crossed with Afghani indicas. And then, of course, it's been the backbone of a lot of different strains. Jack the Ripper was created by the Dank. It is, they took a Jack's Cleaner, which is a strain they also created, and they crossed it with a Space Queen male, which they call Space Dude. And then that gave him Jack the Ripper. Mm-hmm. And Trinity is just a super rare weed no one ever seems to be able to get. Although its genetics are used here. If you search it out, you can't even really find genetics online for that. It's just supposed to be skunky.
Okay.
And super rare. So this has kind of a lime sherbet smell to it. Has a good terpene profile like we were just talking about earlier. I'm going to throw some of this in the grinder, and we're going to keep on smoking on the wax through the Puffco. Whatever you're smoking on, we hope it's as delicious as ours. Let's start puffing down and let's dive into
the weekly wrap up.
All right, Paul, this week on the weekly roundup, had an interesting UFC. I keep saying roundup. Isn't that funny? The weekly wrap up. Because, like, you're wrapping a joint. And I keep saying it that way forever. I don't know why. It's not like I'm a fucking cowboy. It's the roundup. And I'm not even that high yet. I mean, we were smoking some wax earlier, but damn, roundup. I noticed it on last week's show, too. I was like, I said roundup when I was editing. Anyways, as you can tell from the intro you just saw, it's the weekly wrap-up. And let's fucking talk about the UFC, Paul.
Yeah. Another fight night out in Vegas. Another one of those, you know, kind of top-heavy.
It was. I enjoyed it, though, overall. The main card had some consequences for the featherweight division, but let's start down with a fight I found pretty exciting, which was the welterweight showdown between Matt Brown and Diego Lima.
Yeah.
You know, there's been a lot of talk about, which, incident before, I guess before we got into that, we say the results. Matt Brown was a KO in round two at like 12 seconds in.
Yeah.
And it was nasty. A devastating KO. Yeah. It was nasty. Yeah. I think it was a right hook. Fucking slept him.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of talk after Matt Brown's last fight and leading up to this, if he's going to retire. He doesn't want to retire.
He's won, what, three in a row now, right?
He's been looking good. You know, for where he's at. I'm not talking about looking good like he should get a title shot or something. But for a 40-year-old veteran who has a has a lot of fights. I mean, his record now, that 25-18. I mean,
yeah.
And don't let those 18 losses fool you. Matt Brown's a hell of a good fighter.
Yeah. Well, that just shows he's had been in the game forever, because eventually you can't win them all.
No. And I'll tell you a fight that I think that makes sense after this, which I don't hear anybody talking about, but just for me, Matt Brown, Nick Diaz. Nick Diaz looking for a combat fight.
Yeah, maybe.
You know that's going to be a war. It doesn't have consequences in the division, which is fine.
Yeah, but I think the UFC wants to go like big with a Nick Diaz return.
They might, but I don't know who they're going to get.
We'll think about it the first
time. Let's just talk about the fight. I think that would be a good fight, personally. Like I said, it's not like anybody's calling for it. But what's there not to like about Matt Brown versus Nick Diaz? It's not like Nick is going to evolve his game. Let's be honest here. Does Nate?
Yeah, but
who's his main training partner?
I think because Nick
it's going to be disabled, Nick.
I think because Nick has taken such a time off that he is going to be naturally a lot fresher than Matt Brown.
Well, sure. And if he beats up Matt Brown, then we'll feed him to somebody tougher. But otherwise,
that's the thing, is I don't know if he's going to be around for two. I think Nick is like going to be there for like one big fight left in his like career. Like, I think he's just holding out for like the right big fight. Makes sense for him. That is like the guy isn't like ridiculously tough, and like he can make some serious dough.
Yeah, I don't know who that would be in the welterweight division, personally.
Yeah,
I mean,
maybe like George.
Yeah, George ain't coming back.
No, not St. Pierre. No, Masvidal.
Oh, I don't know.
Like, Masvidal isn't like the greatest fighter in the division, but he's not bad. And he's got a good following.
I'd rather see him versus Matt. But just personally, I'd rather see him versus Matt Brown than George Masvidal. But that's just me.
Yeah, because I think it would just sell exactly like Nate and him did. Just in my opinion. Probably would.
Probably.
Well, and that fight was actually supposed to happen. Remember, they were assigned to fight. And then
that would have been a lot better Nate before he lost back-to-back fights to Usman in such devastating ways. I mean, when he had a little more heat on his name, I was more interested in that fight. I think we talked about it before. But now, just where they're at right now, I don't know. But you're probably right. It would certainly outsell more. Anyways, with Matt Brown, good performance. Diego Lima, not so hot.
Back to the woodshed.
Yeah, back to the woodshed. The rest of the card was decent. What was your next favorite fight on there that you want to talk about? Because we're not going to talk about the whole card, but...
Yeah...
How about Julian Erosa getting slept?
Yeah. It's
man, tough. That was tough. This is his third stint in the UFC, too. Like,
yeah.
You know, he was on the Ultimate Fighter, and then he was, you know, in the UFC, then he gets cut, and he comes back, and then he gets cut, and then he was on, like, Dana White's Tuesday Night and didn't make it, and then he comes back after this. Yeah. He's doing all right. And there went that momentum he had built up. That was a pretty devastating KO.
Yeah.
It was round one, 37 seconds in.
That's always rough.
Yeah, that's tough, man. How about the Marlon Vera versus Davy Grant fight?
That was a good fight. Awesome. It was really close.
I liked that fight. Vera got the decision, three round.
But it was like real. Not even that it was like crazy close. It just was competitive. Like, they were just like keeping a pace. You know, like Grant kind of has like a weird like story, you know, behind him. Like, he was a guy who like got his UFC contract and then got like. Two devastating injuries back to back, and fucking had to take like 3 years off and come back. And then now he's had this would have been his fourth win in a row had he won. But, you know,
he performed well, though.
I think he showed that he was like he's tough enough to hang with someone like Chito Vera, who I think is severely underrated in the division.
I agree, absolutely.
Like, severely underrated.
I don't know why. Maybe that Aldo fight just was a bad choice, perhaps.
Yeah, I guess. But, like, even take the Aldo fight away, though, you still have, like, his pedigree and where he's at. I think he deserves to at least be, like, top 10 at all times.
I would agree with that.
Like, not even that, like, he needs to hold the ranking of a top 10. But he deserves opponents as if he was a top 10. Like, you know what I'm saying? There's
we'll see
a
what
lot
gets
of
here.
Fights that he could, yeah.
You know, he gets the win here. We'll see what happens next.
True.
The co-main event was pretty much a disappointment, I thought.
I think just Linick like old.
Yeah.
Old Linick.
Sergey, he gets the win, decision. Most heavyweight fights that are decisions tend to be kind of boring on the overall. Yeah. However, the main event, which we saw, Dan Ige versus the Korean Zombie, Jansen Jung.
Yep.
He gets the win, decision, 5-round. I thought it was a pretty dominating performance. I thought the judges had it a little closer than I saw it personally, but not that Ige didn't put up a good fight. He did.
Yeah.
I just thought it was a convincing victory by the Zombie.
Yeah.
He went out and did exactly what he needed to do, and like you just said, he earned his black belt afterwards.
Yeah.
What did you think of that fight overall?
I think it just like was an opportunity for a Zombie to ultimately kind of just show where he is in the division, you know?
Well, he's still a force to be reckoned with, though, wouldn't you say?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, because if you take away, he's kind of one of those ones who gets to the top of the mountain, but never has really been able to, you know, like get over the hump. You know what I mean?
Unfortunately, he was on quite a streak before that weird Yair Rodriguez knockout.
In a fight that he was winning.
In a fight that he was dominating.
Yeah.
And then now he's building himself again up here after the Ortega loss. And he's calling out Max Holloway afterwards, which I think is actually a pretty good fight. I think that could make sense for both fighters.
The whole division, it just makes sense.
You think that's likely to happen?
Well, we got to see because Max is fighting Yair Rodriguez, isn't he?
I wasn't sure if that was finalized or not because isn't he supposedly retired and now he's quitting?
No, he's coming back. What's his name?
I thought there was controversy with Rodriguez's.
No, remember he got cut and then re-signed to the UFC.
Okay, maybe that's what
that was
thinking.
A minute ago though. He's done well since then, so
you're thinking of Zabit.
I'm
thinking of Zabit.
Yeah, 100%.
You're thinking what I'm thinking is probably right.
But yeah, no. It's hard to say his name. Yair.
It is Yair Rodriguez.
Yeah.
Yeah. Max Holloway. Okay.
Max Holloway.
I didn't know that was finalized. Well.
But even he could fight the winner of that fight because I think he deserves a rematch with Yair in a fight that he was winning the whole time. And in the situation where Max would be the guy he fights, that just makes a lot of sense for to see who's going to end up fighting the winner of the title fight coming up.
Yeah, I like that.
It just makes all the sense for a division.
So this wraps up another UFC Fight Night Vegas card at the Apex Center, which I'm going to go on record once again as saying I'm tired of these. I don't like the Dana saying he's going to finish out the entire year doing these fight nights at the Apex.
Yeah.
I get it because he's looking at the ratings they're getting or not being affected. And he doesn't have to put on a show, and then they can still do live gates and have money coming in with the pay-per-views. But as a fan, I think it fucking sucks, man.
Well, and pay-per-views weren't even in the budget for this year, so he like is making hella money just off of the stuff he's doing already.
And it's not it's not just because I think the it sucks not having a crowd there. I don't like always having the tiny cage either.
Yeah.
I prefer the large cage in every fight. I'd wish they did all fights in the same cage. I don't understand the two fight thing in the modern era.
Yeah.
Or the two cage thing in the modern era.
Yeah, that is
It's
not a regional show.
Yeah, like, you're not stuck in the back fucking tiny gym anymore. You gotta tote out a fucking smaller cage because you can't fit it somewhere. That's absurd. This is the UFC now. It's the big show for a long time.
For sure.
But I understand what Dana's all doing there. It's clearly for the money. There's no other reason.
Oh, yeah.
The production costs are all in-house.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no nothing.
Yeah.
I can't imagine how cheap those shows are. Yeah. It's just payroll.
Exactly.
For the fighters.
Yep.
Zero production costs, probably. The Apex is probably...
It's perfect. They've set themselves up. It's weird because they kind of set this up for the Ultimate Fighter to come back and stuff.
Right.
But... In the end, they use because of what happened with the pandemic and everything, they were forced to use it for other cards and stuff like that. So, weirdly, it all works out for them, you know, building the Apex anyways.
It works out for them.
Yeah. I don't know. There's been some good fights in the Apex, I think.
I don't hate the fights. It's just I'm tired of the
I get what you... It gets redundant. Yeah.
Super redundant. And I don't like the silence, but it's just more to it than that. It's the whole thing, because the announcers feel like they have to talk more because the crowd's not yelling. So they feel like they have to fill this fucking space.
Yeah.
I don't like that the fighters can hear the announcers because they've literally influenced fights that have happened at the Apex.
Yeah.
And I think that's weird. I don't know. I know it's petty shit. It's just personal shit.
No,
it's just
I see
me.
What you're saying.
You know what I mean? But
no, it makes sense, though.
We'll see. We'll get out the year, and hopefully everything goes back to normal with the UFC at least.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, too, is maybe doing – and maybe even maybe doing some away and some here just, like, as a mix, you know what I mean, would even liven it up a bit. Just, like, maybe, like, one fight night a month is in somewhere else, and then you come back and you're in the Apex for 3 weeks. I mean, that would even be okay.
Anything.
You know.
But at least other shows
or
are
2 weeks
expanding
or
out
much.
Right now.
Yeah.
And that pretty much wraps the UFC. Although we do have some other interesting
UFC related.
UFC related and some boxing here to wrap up.
Yeah.
Let's dive into the UFC related. That would be Anderson Silva's match against Julio Cesar Chavez Jr.
Yeah.
Which took place on pay-per-view over the weekend, as we discussed last week. Anderson Silva wins. A bullshit split decision, from what I understand. I'm not going to pretend that I watched that fight or bought that card. I did not. Did you?
No, but I watched the highlights.
Watched some highlights. I did too, a little bit. And I've read up on several articles. Yeah. But the general consensus seems to be that the split decision was bullshit and Anderson tooled him up.
Yeah.
And I think the fight stats back that up, don't they?
Exactly. Yeah, of course. I think everything I've read and everything I've seen, it just seemed like Anderson controlled the pace of the fight and where, like, how literally just out punched him for.
What did he wind up
rounds.
Throwing for the fight?
It was like 99 of 300 and something.
That's what he landed overall.
Yeah. Which is crazy pace to keep up for a 46-year-old man. It's pretty
crazy.
Yeah,
throwing 300. I mean, that's not the greatest percentage. He's down in
it's not
the
greatest percentage,
but whatever.
When you got a guy who's only throwing. Like, on Chavez's side, he only landed 50 of 150, so he every time, even if he misses or, like, if they're glancing blows or anything like that, it looks like he's outworking him, you know?
I had initially thought that Chavez was probably going to win, because on paper you look at the number of fights he had, that he's actually a professional boxer, and he's going against a retired MMA fighter. Who hasn't really got it together with the striking enough to even win MMA fights. I mean, he's on this terrible losing streak.
Yeah.
And then once he missed weight at the, you know, at the weigh-ins at a cruiserweight.
Yeah.
I began to doubt that.
Had to give up 100 grand.
That was amazing. He missed weight by 2 pounds from what I understand.
For 100 grand.
And instead of going and sweating that shit off, he lost, like you just said, $100,000 he had to pay to Anderson Silva.
That shit's nuts.
That's when you knew this was just going to be another Chavez fiasco, right? Yeah. I'm not taking anything away from Silva. I'm just saying, well, that's a pretty heavy indication that this is once again going to be somebody who's repeating a pattern he's shown.
Yeah.
Of not really giving that much of a fuck.
It's not
he went out there and he fought, and he still had enough skill that if he really tried, he should have put up a much better fight, but... Kudos to Anderson. He looked pretty good. I mean, good grief. The highlights I saw, this dude's dropping his hands and fucking calling Chavez in and, you know, doing his
freaking
thing.
Old school Anderson. Huh?
Like, fucking clowning him.
Yeah. Well, hey, Anderson's 2-1 as a boxer now, so watch out.
2-1-1.
Ooh. Dangerous.
Right. Do you think he's going to do it again against somebody else?
Yeah. I think he fights Roy Jones Jr. next.
You think he wants a... professional match or an exhibition? Because Roy Jones' only comeback thus far has been an exhibition against Tyson.
Yeah, but not really, though, because his last fight was, 2017? And he never,
this is
like,
true. He was active for quite a while.
Yeah, he never really like officially retired after that. It was like a we'll see. Like, he's never retired. Like, you know, he's one of those guys who always kind of, like, glides off because he does other stuff. You know, he, like, does commentating and other stuff like that. In promoting himself, so he does other things, so like he always leaves the door open for him to, you know.
I don't think that's a bad fight. There's history there.
They've been trying to do it for years, man.
My only caveat would be I do not want it to be an exhibition.
Yeah,
it needs
to
be
a
professional.
Yeah, I need it to be a pro fight for sure.
And for those of you listening who might not understand, I mean, there's a massive world of difference between these exhibition fights and an honest to God sanctioned boxing bout. It's glorified sparring. Nobody's really taking anything serious. I mean, anybody who argues differently is just in fantasy land. Like this, like the fucking Floyd Mayweather Logan Paul thing is the prime example. That wasn't a fight. There was no fight. There's no winner. All these people doing all these interviews and talking about this thing, like, oh, Floyd looks so bad, or Floyd looks so good, or vice versa. It wasn't a fight.
It didn't count.
That's not how Floyd looks. That's not how Logan. It was just absurd. I don't understand the disconnect people seem to have with that. But as long as it's not an exhibition, I'm down with Anderson Silva versus Roy Jones Jr. Sure, why not?
Yeah, I'm in.
What about the rest of the weekend's fights, Paul? We actually had some legitimate, consequential bouts.
Yeah.
How about Inoue?
Continuing little his monster. Dominance.
Gets a, what is it, a third round?
Third round body shot KO. After he had dropped him with two other body shots earlier in the fight.
Was it one in each round, I do believe, right?
Yeah.
Straight to the liver on everyone. Left fucking body shot. Left hook body shot to the liver.
And every time he went down, he was grimacing in pain. He was like, you could see it. He was just like, oh, my God.
It was savage.
It was nice. It was nice, yeah. It, just continuing the dominance of his, you know, ultimate, you know, it's just his division at this point.
Without a doubt. I love KOs like that. It was so such precision and power wrapped up into one. He's hitting that exact same spot three times in a row. And finally on that last one, the ref was gave him mercy, honestly. Because he was on the ground, like, yelling.
Yeah.
And you can't blame him. Those things will paralyze you. Same in MMA. You know, we see him more in MMA with kicks than we do with punches, at least in my opinion. I don't know, I have stats to back that up. I'm just from years of watching mixed martial arts. Would you agree with that? We see more from kicks in MMA?
Yeah, probably, but still, though. I don't know. Like, I think kicks are more like...
I can't think of a liver shot punch in MMA that's been a fight stopper. Lately, I'm not saying it hasn't happened. I'm just like, I can think of several fighters who've been in them with kicks.
Aldo stopped a couple people with body shots.
I could believe that.
Yeah, I've
seen Cerrone comes to mind. I know he's ended a few fights with liver kicks.
Yeah,
I think he's been on the receiving end of a few fights with liver kicks as well.
Yeah,
we've seen him crumpled with them.
Yeah.
Anyways, devastating punches from the little monster. Continued dominance from him. What about Charlo? He defended his title over the weekend. I believe that's the, is it middleweight or super middleweight?
Yeah, another, it's just middleweight, I think. Another, you know, dominant performance by Charlo, though.
Yep, it was a decision.
Yeah.
But it was a dominant performance.
120-108.
Yeah.
But, you know, and then after he calls out Canelo and Triple G, which, you know, could be,
I would be happy with any of those fights.
Yeah. I'll take Triple G versus Charlo. I think that makes a lot of sense, honestly.
Yeah, I do too.
Because, I mean, Triple G is trying to chase Canelo around, but I don't really think Canelo gives a shit about Triple G at this point.
No.
I think he's kind of been there, done that about that whole situation
with
those two.
He's not wanting the trilogy there.
Yeah, so I think if you're Triple G, I think the next big fight you could probably take is Charlo. So, yeah, they should run that.
Well, that ends the weekly wrap-up, my friend. And now let's dive into the news outside of the cage. You know, Paul, this week I think we're going to continue a storyline we touched on last week, which is Ariel Helwani's departure from ESPN and what's coming up next. So tell everybody what has happened over the weekend. There's been some big news, at least in the MMA world, with Ariel.
Yeah. He's taking back the MMA Hour and going back to, I guess it's SB Nation, right?
SB Nation and MMAfighting.com.
And he also signed a deal with BT Sport as well, I guess.
The MMA Hour, his flagship podcast that, I mean, got him where he is, which, of course,
he's returning.
For most people listening, probably aren't aware of the history of that. So he builds the podcast up, and then at one point he signs over to Vox Media, which is MMAfighting.com.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he was there, I guess part of the deal we find out later is that they have the rights to his podcast now. He gets the deal with ESPN, and he can't bring the MMA hour to ESPN, which I'm certain is what he wanted to do,
yeah,
is have that show on ESPN. However, he couldn't do it, so he's forced to start all these different shows that he winds up doing.
The Arihuani MMA show.
The Arihuani MMA show, which he runs at the same time, at the same hours he did the MMA hour before, which they gave to Luke Thomas.
Yeah.
Afterwards, and then there winds up being a little controversy there with guests and scheduling, and a little bit of bad blood is created, and then Luke leaves the MMA hour, and it's taken over by a couple others, and then kind of just dies off.
Yeah,
it's right. And Luke goes to Showtime.
Yeah, it's been passed around kind of now.
I think it morphed into Sean Elshadi's podcast, but I'm not sure anymore because I didn't watch it, all the changes through there. And then, of course, Ariel's leaving now, and he's starting it back up. And like you said, he also signs the deal with BT Sports.
Mm-hmm.
You know what's interesting about that, before we dive into some other specifics, is I read that BT Sports deal includes boxing, and then get this, WWE coverage.
Yeah, he wants to do WWE. Yeah.
Of course, BT Sports is a European sports channel,
mm-hmm.
so there's a lot of people here in America not familiar with it.
Yeah.
Is he following big in Europe? Do we know? I have no idea. I don't know how big BT Sports is in Europe. Is he going to be on? I know there's three of them. Yeah. There's BT Sports 1, 2, and 3, which might be like the same as
ESPN. I think it's like ESPN, though, but outside of
UFC. I know their UFC pay-per-views broadcast on BT over there, just regular.
Yeah, and then also normal ESPN, like football and everything is on BT Sports. American football.
Yeah, American football, right. Yeah. So that's interesting, although there's no denying, and we're not going to dive into the what happened because we covered all that last week, but there's no denying that this is a step down and back to where he was before. I mean, the BT Sports thing is good, mm-hmm. and I'm not throwing shade at MMAfighting.com at all, but I mean, that's not the same sphere.
Well, anywhere near ESPN. Yeah, it's not different companies.
And it's in complete different levels of the game.
Yeah.
I mean, MMAfighting.com is a big name in online MMA coverage, which is not a big name in sports whatsoever.
Yeah.
MMA coverage is not a noise in the sports world compared to ESPN.
Mm-hmm.
So I wish the best for him, but it is an interesting dynamic of him coming back and doing that.
Yeah. I think the only good part, I guess, would be is he definitely has more creative control over MMAfighting.com, whereas ESPN is more like, Ariel, you got this time slot and this you know, ESPN's a 24-hour network, so it's every
right.
It's Sports Center for fucking however long, and then you get your small little hour-long program fit in here and here and here and here. Whereas before, when he was doing the MMA hour in the past, he fucking have 5-hour podcasts. Him talking to every single person from the weekend. Everyone got their shot. He'd have guests, all this other shit. And he had never really got to have that kind of show when he was at ESPN. So, I mean, I guess that's one of the pluses. He can kind of have a little bit more of a whole, less of a production and more of just a, kind of what we're doing, a podcast where he gets to talk to people he wants to talk to. And, you know, it'll have that similar cult following, I guess, you know, just kind of how people feel. Like, we talked about this before, too. Like, the numbers kind of fell off when he went to ESPN.
Yeah, I mean, let's not to be mean to Ariel, but he did not get good ratings at ESPN.
Because they niched him. Like, they did what they're doing with that MMA has always done. They put, you know, when Ariel's show comes on the West Coast?
No, I didn't watch his stuff on ESPN.
Yeah, it comes on at 12 p.m. to 1 a.m. is his time slot on ESPN. That's when it will come on.
Yeah, that's
tough. How do you pull anybody at that time? Wow. It's not an early crowd because the early crowd's waking up at 3 or 4. It's not the late crowd because late crowd, that's 1 o'clock area. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's kind of a weird time slot to begin with.
So yeah,
he does better on a free form podcast where people play it whenever they want to listen to it. You know what I mean?
See your point there, and I agree with it. But for him, and I read that he was disappointed that he couldn't do that at ESPN. But to play devil's advocate, to think that you could go to ESPN and do a 5-hour fucking show and do whatever you want is ridiculous, bro. That's as corporate as it gets. That's Disney.
Even this podcast used to get capped off, because the ESPN radio, little fucking spot he was doing it out of, it was him and that guy had to do it in 2 hours' time.
Yeah, I mean, that's just the way it is. You want to go play in the big leagues, you're going to play with their rules.
Big league rules, yeah, exactly.
That are all going to be based around time slots, man. Yeah. I mean, that's what they do in advertising sales. That's what it's time slots, and in those time slots are ad time slots. Mm-hmm. And that's all that fucking matters.
Yep.
So.
And we've seen ESPN stopped it. Is really no longer giving a single fuck about their anchors. Like, if you like look at like all the stories that have been written, like you go to Dan Le Batard and like a whole bunch of other like major names for ESPN that were like pretty much told after the pandemic, like, yeah, if you want to be on ESPN anymore, we're gonna have to pay you 60% less than what we were paying you before.
That's a tough cut.
Like, what?
I've heard,
like,
there's controversy there.
Yeah, and like that's just. It's a whole nother thing that it just seems like ESPN has kind of gotten to this thing where they know how big they are. They're just like, we could put anybody on here. Like,
well, they've also had a problem. You know, we're speaking about the importance of time slots and ad dollars. They had a problem in the past few years where their ratings were going down due to their anchors, for whatever reason, deciding to get a little too political, where people just get tired of. I mean, most people go to sports to, like, forget about all the nonsense in the world. Yeah. You don't want to hear whatever side you're on necessarily about politics.
Yeah.
I mean, that's initially what sparked this show. I got tired of hearing everybody talk about fucking politics. We're trying to watch MMA.
Yeah.
We hear about this everywhere else. I mean, you get bombarded with that shit everywhere, right? Mm-hmm. People want to escape. And I know the ratings did suffer a little bit. It's not, like, dramatic, but it did have an effect.
They're still ESPN.
That's what I mean. They're still ESPN. It's not like they're going to go out of business or something. But there's no denying they took a hit, and there was talk about it, you know. And
other networks like Fox and CBS were able to, like, see a little boost on their own side because of it.
So they're, you know, having to rein those dollars in, and that's just another problem when you deal with corporate stuff, so...
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. I'm not going to lie. I didn't watch his shit on ESPN. Yeah. I gave it a go. I'm not a DC fan, so I couldn't get into DC and Helwani.
Yeah. Well, and like, I felt like they did him more like dirty because it was more like he was signed to fucking YouTube instead of ESPN. It was like an ESPN like promoted YouTube. You know what I mean? He never really had, like, although he'll never obviously have, going back to MMA fighting, he won't really have like a produced show like you would at ESPN. But I just never think he really got a fair shot, is what I'm saying. Like,
you could have a valid point there. I didn't watch enough to
I think just because also MMA is one of ESPN's. Although it's on ESPN, it's not like the most popular sport in the world. Let's be honest.
It's the stepchild of the platform still. It's still a big deal in the MMA world. It got on ESPN.
Exactly. And it is. It is huge. But it is not football. It's not basketball. It's not baseball. You know, that's why they have like SportsCenter at like.
Well, that's why Ariel's at
everything.
I mean, he has a show, but it's at fucking midnight.
Yeah.
At least on the West Coast or wherever
it
is. Well.
Weird.
Good luck to Ariel.
Like I said,
I don't know if the market is there. We'll see
what he did.
Yeah, we'll see.
And I feel like he's pretty much like goated in the reporter community in that like community. You know what I mean? Like no one.
Yeah, he's still the only reporter that gets cheered at press conferences. I mean, and he'll be back to doing that, I suppose, because he hasn't been at those lately. You know, I don't know. I'd hate to see Dana flex his fucking nuts and deny him a press.
I don't think he can.
He can deny press credentials to whoever he wants.
Yeah, I know, but I'm saying
that'd
like,
be pretty shitty.
I feel like he's gotten so big.
I mean,
that,
ask Josh Nash about that. Like,
true. You know. But I just feel like if he did do that, it would just become what it became the first time he tried to do it,
which was an uproar.
It was like an uproar of like, come on, man. That's.
I would hope he's learned, but
yeah.
I don't know.
That's another thing that's good about him going back to MMA fighting is we are going to get the reporter Ariel back rather than the produce show Ariel. Whereas like Ariel is going to be like going after stories and shit like that again. You know.
I hope so. We'll see. I enjoyed some of that.
You know what I mean? Like he used to have, although the UFC hated it and Dana hated it and he always fishes people for it, but like when he's back on getting, you know. Getting what like the next big like announcement,
next big scoop, next big fights
like,
and stuff.
It'll help the freaking kind of the bullshit we've talked about before with MMA fighting and a lot of these other articles. It's just too much articles about stuff that no one really cares about in the MMA world. So hopefully, like,
dude, you
know what I mean? Or like, or just like the most simple shit that doesn't need to be articles written about in the first place.
I would actually really hope that, because I'm sick and tired of going on respected sites like MMA Fighting and seeing 16 articles about Jake Paul, or so-and-so said this on Twitter.
Yeah.
And now we're going to write an article about a tweet.
Yeah.
You're writing articles about tweets.
Yeah.
This is not industry standard. You don't, at least maybe some boxing websites do this. The boxing sites I go to do not write articles every time a boxer fucking tweets.
If it's like a 2-hour, like a heated exchange on Twitter, I get it. But if someone tweets like "I'm free," like then they're like, oh, "He left his promoter." Like, no, you know what I mean?
Tweet,
they make bullshit about that. Is a lot of times it's not even true and ends up being debunked. But like they'll write a whole article about their theory of what their tweet means or something, you know?
Or when they get real desperate, they'll do articles about shit talking between fighters on Twitter. Like, man, we don't need articles about that shit. Like, we all got Twitter too.
It's different. Like if they like screenshotted it and like reposted like what it said, and there was no article about it. But if they're like, they've been rumored to fight and blah 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 blah, that's like, it's like, okay, we get that if they're talking shit to each other.
It's just nonsense. I mean, I guess they post them because they get clicks. I mean, that's what that boils down to too. But personally, I tire of it.
Yeah,
I'd like some.
But I hope
MMA's
this brings the platform back
journalism.
Up. You know,
yeah, we'll
because
see.
I do think it's took a dip since he left.
That I agree. All right, well, that wraps news outside of the cage, and that brings us to the boxing breakdown. Well, got a few things to talk about this week, man.
This week.
Yes, absolutely. How about Gervonta Davis moving up to 140 pounds? Who's he fighting?
Mario Barrios.
And that is for
the WBA.
Yeah.
Well,
and that's the super
Davis
lightweight.
He hops back and forth. Because he's the champion at super lightweight, but he was.
Yeah, but this is his first real test at 140 pounds.
Yeah,
I mean, a lot of people think that this is dangerous for him because of that extra weight.
Yeah.
That he's going to lose a little bit of speed and maybe not be as powerful there.
I don't see him losing any power. That
I don't believe that argument.
Nasty
at all.
Power.
Yeah.
He's tough. I mean,
I think. He's very small.
Yeah,
but he is
small,
so strong.
Yeah. They don't call him Tank Davis for nothing, you know.
No, I'm very intrigued by this fight.
I mean, the other guy, though, also Barrios, he's 26-0. So, I mean, he's definitely no slouch.
Not at all.
And, I mean, he's got 17 KOs to himself. So, seems like he can put people down as well.
It's a legitimate fight. I mean, if you look on BoxRec, they got these guys, you know, Tank at number one. And then they've got Barrios at 10.
Yeah.
So, it's a solid matchup, however you want to dissect the BoxRec rankings. I mean, a lot of people go by those. A lot of people don't, but I find it interesting. Who do you like? Who do you think is going to win, Paul?
I think it's time for Tank to just, like, beat the shit out of all these mandatories so he can get to the bigger fight. So, I'd like to see him get in, get out.
Quick KO? What do you predict?
I don't know if it's quick, but I think it'll be devastating.
Yeah.
After that, Santa Cruz one,
that uppercut?
Yeah, like he's fucking... The power that man carries is nuts.
Uppercuts have been my pet peeve ever since that what was it? Was it the Logan Paul hitting mitts with those uppercuts, and people are taking these things seriously, and no one's talking, at least in the mainstream coverage, that's not even a punch that you're throwing. Like, I don't know what you're doing, but this ain't the tough man contest, and that's not an uppercut. And then when you talk about an uppercut, that Tank Davis last KO was picture perfect. YouTube that if you haven't seen it, everybody listening.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like Tank by KO there. I think that's a great fight.
Yeah, I do too.
How about the return of Vasily Lomachenko?
Yeah, Loma. Since his loss, that unification bout against Teofimo Lopez, which is, I mean... Freaking kind of broke the internet for a little bit during COVID, you know?
He's fighting Nakatani, who, I mean, he's 19-1, 13 KOs.
He also has fought Lopez also, though.
And that's his one loss, right, was to Lopez.
Yeah, no, he gave Lopez, he gave him some good work, I thought.
I thought he did, too. He did, I was going to say, there's not really any shine lost off of him in that loss to Lopez, in my mind. This is a tough test for him. He's a solid fighter. You know, he's tall, too. He's 5'11", so he's going to be taller than Loma. What do you think? You think he's going to bounce back from the loss? You think mentally?
Well,
you know, he has this habit in these fights of kind of is what cost him the title, where he lulls him in the early and then he turns it on late. Mm-hmm. And there's an argument that that's what led to his loss to Lopez was.
He just got outworked.
He got outworked. Like, he didn't do much in the early rounds. By the time he got to work, and it was too late.
Yeah, exactly.
So do you think he comes out a little quicker here? Do you think that he just stays what he always does?
Yeah, I think coming out quick would be smart. But it also would be predictable at the same time. So who knows?
I don't know. I'm pretty interested in that fight.
Here's the thing. When you're someone like Loma, like those kind of fights can happen, but at the same time, you can't forget what got you to the dance. You know what I mean? Like coming out quick, yeah, maybe that'll look good, and, you know, people will be like, oh, okay, maybe it's not him, blah, blah, blah. But at the same time, with a guy who's bigger, who's, you know.
Yeah, he's got a 4-inch height advantage.
Yeah.
About a 6-inch reach advantage.
Maybe, you know, stifling him a bit would be a good idea. But at the same time, you don't want to compromise your game plan to appease to the people outside of the ring. You know what I mean?
I agree. So, well, I think Lomachenko is going to get the win here. I think he's going to bounce back. Do you think he'll chase down a Lopez rematch or just
although Lopez doesn't seem like he wants a rematch at all. He doesn't seem like
he's interested in it at all.
But I do think that would make a lot of sense, yeah.
Same here. The next thing up in the boxing breakdown is a little bit of different flavor, but it is still boxing, which is going to be BKFC's big, massive card coming up, BKFC 18th, which is taking place this upcoming Friday, which is absolutely loaded. The undercard is way too much to talk about, but the main card here has 4 championship fights on it against names that are going to be recognizable to anybody that's paying any attention to combat sports in MMA world here. Let's start here at the main event here, the lightweight. Well, let's just start at the lightweight title. All right. Mm-hmm. We've got Luis Palomino, who is a hell of a fighter, longtime MMA fighter.
Yeah.
I believe he has wins over Gaethje, doesn't he?
I think it was. No, he didn't beat him, but they were like freaking. It was really close. They had
epic fights.
Yeah, like epic fights.
Epic, historic fights. He's a hell of a fighter. He's going to be taking on British sensation Tyler Goodjohn, who is very well known in the British promotion and made his debut, which was okay, against Crazy Horse Bennett just a couple months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And they're putting him right into a title shot basically because of his British record and his known skill over there, not what he did against Bennett.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I mean, he got the win there. That is a hell of a fight, though. Palomino, last time we saw him, he beat Isaac Valley Flag, another UFC, former UFC fighter at BKFC 11, in an amazing fight. I mean, he just whooped up on him, too.
Yeah.
And then he knocked out Jim Allers after that at BKFC 14.
Yeah, I remember seeing him knock out.
So
that's a good one.
This, to me, is probably the most exciting fight on the card. Goodjohn has been here in Vegas a while. He's very, very good. I'm curious as to how it's going to go. I think he's going to get the upset win here, personally.
You think it's an upset, though?
Being as he's had one fight in the BKFC, I would say, and that is relatively unknown. It's not like bare-knuckle boxing in Britain is some huge, well-known thing here.
Yeah.
I would say it's a bit of an upset. I don't know what the Vegas odds are. Mm-hmm. BKFC, I know they're listed somewhere, but it's not like that's major stuff in sports books yet. This is only their 18th event.
Yeah.
But they're getting there. I would consider it to be an upset in the sports books, though. I could be wrong. I think he's going to win either way. I think he's going to want to prove that he looks, that he has a lot more skill than he showed in the Charles Bennett fight.
Yeah.
And Palmino, it'd be a very tough test. I expect him a decision, though. I don't think it's going to go to a KO. I think it's going to be a five-round decision.
I could see it.
Tyler Goodjohn.
I could see it happening. I think Palomino wins, though.
All right, well, let's go down to the co-main event, which is Hector Lombard versus Joe Riggs.
It's a tough fight.
This is an amazing fight. I'm a big Joe Riggs fan. Hector Lombard, I think, is perfect for bare-knuckle boxing. This is, I believe, I could be wrong here, but between those two fighters, I believe they have about 130 fights. So even though they don't have a lot of bare-knuckle experience, these are two. Who has more fights than that? You ever see? I mean, that's outrageous. That is like close. That is over 60 fights for both of them on average. That's amazing.
That's crazy.
Lombard has, this will be his third fight in BKFC, I do believe. We last saw him take out Kendall Grove, who used to be in the UFC, and then he was in Bellator for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Riggs has been in nearly every MMA promotion I can think of offhand. I mean, he had a super famous fight with Nick Diaz, who we were talking about earlier, where they both went to the hospital, and then they started fighting in the hospital. You remember that one?
Yeah.
I think that Riggs will pull this out over Lombard, though. I know Lombard has heavy hands, and we haven't seen Joe Riggs since 2019 in BKFC, but I think that actually plays to his strengths because he has 160 fights. He's not going to be rusty going into BKFC.
Yeah, shit.
What are your thoughts?
I think it's just one of those, just a banger between, you know, two vets that are, I think it's whoever's going to be able to stay fresh, like, throughout the fight is going to win. You know what I mean? Because both these guys have, like,
they've
adequate,
got,
like, experience.
Yeah, and they've got experience.
But, like, Lombard's last fight
BKFC.
Was boring as fuck. Like, he was, like, scared to really push the gas, like, late in the fight. He seemed to gas after the third round.
Yeah, it was a unanimous decision draw against Barros.
Yeah, so,
that was a terrible fight.
I don't know where he is, like, exactly. But Riggs, obviously, he's got, you know, he's got an extensive background, it seems like, now in, obviously, as much as you can.
And Diesel Riggs is tough as fuck. Yeah. I mean, I'm just sorry. He's tough as fuck. I think he's tougher than Hector Lombard. I don't think Lombard can knock him out. And after that, you know, you look at momentum a little bit. Yeah, Riggs has been out, but he's not going to be rusty. And you look at that terrible fucking fight with Lombard, who had he's done that in MMA, too.
Yeah, he has these weird, like, even in Bellator, he did the same shit. You know, he just has these, like, these lulls that happened. And, I mean,
well, it sounds like we're both picking Joe Riggs here.
Yeah, I'm taking Riggs, I think.
All right, well, we cap the event off with the main heavyweight showdown for Joey Beltran's heavyweight title against Sam Shoemaker, who I believe was the very first BKFC heavyweight champ. I could be wrong. He's held the title before. He's been off for a while, and now he's coming back. I don't know who wins this. I'm leaning towards Beltran.
Yeah.
They're both around the same size. Beltran is small for a heavyweight if you're thinking like boxing or UFC. He's only around 205 pounds.
Yeah. I mean,
he fought in the UFC as a light heavyweight.
Mm-hmm.
However, I'm thinking he's got it over Sam Shoemaker here, despite Shoemaker being a little bit bigger. He's like 3 inches taller, a little bit more reach. And Shoemaker's tough as fuck, and he's got experience in there. But Beltran, I think, is going to win this. And I think afterwards they're going to match him up with Frank Mir.
Think so?
And I think that that's a problem for Joey Beltran.
You think so?
Well, I think this is where the aforementioned 205 pounds becomes a serious issue.
Yeah, true.
Because Frank Mir,
Shoemaker's pretty big.
He's about 230. He's 6'3", about 230. Yeah, he's a little bit bigger. But, I mean, Mir, in his boxing debut,
He looked good,
and he's very large. Yeah. He's going to be a minimum of 265 pounds in there.
Yeah.
I mean,
you think he'll just give him the title shot like that, though?
Yeah, I do. After the boxing, since he had the boxing match, and he lost. Okay, but he looked good. He went the distance, and he actually looked decent. Of all the MMA fighters on that card, he looked the best.
Yeah, probably.
And he didn't embarrass himself at all. And he was fighting a former world champion.
Yeah.
And from what I saw, you can fuck with bare knuckle because that's not boxing. I mean, yes, it's boxing, but it's not boxing with gloves on. It's a whole different game.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. Mm-hmm. So that's what I think happens. I think Beltran's going to keep his title, and then he's going to go into it with Frank Mir, who is just going to be too big and too much. Hmm. And we're going to have Frank Mir as BKFC heavyweight champion.
Yeah, I could see that maybe, yeah. I could see it.
That'd be it could happen. That'd be the best thing that could ever happen to them.
I mean, yeah, for them, it would.
That's massive.
Shoot their numbers to the roof.
Yeah, we know who Joey
definitely
Beltran
be
is.
He'd be the biggest star in BKFC if he just came in and became champion. Like
that would be amazing.
Yeah,
and I think he's got the skills to do it and the size. There's just nobody that size in BKFC for whatever reason.
Yeah,
and I don't think there will be for a minute.
I mean,
unless
they
sign another UFC,
bringing Bigfoot Silva.
All right.
Isn't Gabriel Gonzaga in BKFC?
They said he was, but then nothing came of it.
I thought he fought not too long ago.
That could be.
But he's a little bit even more far gone than Frank is.
I'm a big fan of Bare Knuckle Fighting Championship. Like I have their monthly thing. It's like $5. Like yeah. That'll include this card on Friday. It's a hell of a deal. But I will certainly criticize, like, their website is a pain in the ass to use. It's hard to find information about their cards. It's super hard to find results and stats of their events.
Yeah.
I couldn't even find a decent list of this card on their website. I don't know what the undercard is because they don't post that information.
Yeah.
Like, I get it, they're new, but it's hard. So, I mean, I don't know. Gabriel Gonzaga might have fought because I have a really hard time finding info on their shit right now. It's just the way they're doing it. They are brand new, so it's not that bad. But
I feel it.
Hopefully the record keeping will get a little bit better. God, you think the UFC's website is bad, dude.
Yeah, right.
At least you can talk shit about them because they're loaded.
Yeah.
Well, I think that wraps the boxing breakdown, though.
Yeah.
And that brings us to what's in the cards for next week. I actually got a decent 3 MMA cards coming up, right, Paul? What are we looking at here?
Yeah, so we got Bellator 261, PFL 6, and then UFC Fight Night, Gon versus Volkov.
Heavyweight showdown in the UFC, Cyril Gon.
Yeah, let's just get that one out of the way first. So we got Cyril Gon taking on, Volkov, who's always a tough motherfucker. You know,
Gon has looked good. I mean, he's coming off the JDS win last, right?
Yeah. Well, no, you beat a... Beat your boy Jarzinho.
Oh, well, that's right. Yeah.
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 Which I mean, it was solid.
It was solid.
Alexander Volkov, I feel like, is in a weird situation though, like where he's another one where he gets to the like close to the top of the mountain and then has some kind of fall off.
Mm-hmm. Multiple times.
Yeah. And I mean, this could be a good crossroads fight. I mean, right now. Heavyweight is kind of in a weird, like, gridlock, you know what I mean, at the top, where you got John kind of pushing his way in, and Stipe kind of, you know, vouching, trying to get vying for a, you know, rematch, and then Derek Lewis is kind of sitting back like, yeah, I'll fight Ngannou next, I think I should, but if I don't, fuck it.
So well, let's talk like about that for a second, because that affects this fight, because you were thinking that Gon might get a title shot with a win if there wasn't this clusterfuck at the top.
Yeah.
For all of Dana White's yapping about John Jones isn't getting it and Derek Lewis is, have you noticed that they're scheduling cards in September now with headliners and no fucking title fights for the heavyweight championship? Nope. There ain't no signed Derek Lewis fight.
Nope.
I find that very interesting.
I do too. It's strange.
The only reason that there wouldn't be is John Jones.
Yeah. I do think those negotiations are just, like, never going to stop, you know what I mean? Where it's, like, so it could potentially delay some bullshit to happen in that division. But I do agree with you, yeah.
If that fight was going to happen,
it would have been already.
He's talking about doing it in August, and now they're already naming headliners for September, and there's crickets coming out of Derek Lewis versus Francis Ngannou.
Yeah.
So... And John Jones has his new advisor coming in. Stipe, I don't think, is angling for an immediate rematch because he's still talking about he wants to put on 35 pounds of weight. So I think he's going to be
I don't know if it's an immediate rematch. I
contented.
Think it's just
yeah, with letting Jones hopefully get it
in
his mind and then fighting the winner of that.
Yeah, but that makes sense.
Somebody's getting shut out in that deal, which throws a wrench in the who's the next contender. Which throws a wrench in who's really the next contender when it comes to fighters like Ciryl Gane. I mean, what does he get here with a win? Nothing much. He just stays steady.
Yeah.
And that's dangerous at heavyweight.
100%.
Heavyweight's a place where you want to take your momentum and seize on it right away.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of times you can get a title shot off two wins at heavyweight. Mm-hmm. You can't gamble too much.
No.
So
there's just too much on the line when you're talking about those guys, too. Because a lot of them are older. I mean, Gane's a little bit younger than a lot of the guys in the division, but I do think that, like, let's say Volkov wins this fight, and then he's got to deal with that. That's going to be tough for him to sit on the sideline all that time trying to be like, well, I deserve a shot. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's just tough. It's in a weird place. I wish the UFC would just, you know, give us some clarity. If you're really doing the Derrick Lewis fight, you know, set it up. But don't sit here and go, oh. Or at the same time, too, if you are truly trying to set up the John fight, too, You're bullshitting with this Lewis talk. And
right. It's a negotiating tactic at Derrick Lewis's expense.
It's fucked up.
But if all three of them are somehow in the mix, I mean, that leaves a good solid year at the best before that's sorted out.
Yeah.
Because if one way or the other, they're going to – I don't see anybody leapfrogging them in the meantime.
Yeah, and if you're Francis Ngannou, are you going to take an extremely dangerous fight like a Derrick Lewis fight – and or like a Stipe rematch when you have John Jones possibly on the table? I don't know. You know what I mean?
Maybe Jones's new advisor is getting some work done behind the scenes.
I would hope so.
Because he said there's absolutely no more negotiating in public on this fight. So when we hear no news, it doesn't mean at all that there's no news.
Exactly.
Because Jones has definitely been told to
shut
up
advisor
about that
said
as
that?
Well. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
He said that won't be happening. Oh, so wow. Jones isn't going to tweet about it either. Because he wouldn't have hired this guy not to do what the fuck he says. So.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So no news, I imagine, is good news there.
Yeah.
Bellator 261 or PFL 6, my friend?
Let's go Bellator first. Close it out.
All right. Bellator. Heavyweight title interim fight.
Mm-hmm.
Correct? At the headlining spot. Liz Carmouche on the card and a co-main. And some decent fights, some former UFC fighters on there. Miles Jury, I always like watching him fight.
Yeah.
A few others. Which fights on this card stand out to you? We can't talk about them all, so let's pick a couple.
There's some pretty good fights on here. I mean, let's just talk about the headliner a little bit.
Well, we've got Timothy Johnson. Now, he's taking on a replacement fighter, I do believe.
I can't remember who he was supposed to fight. He was supposed to fight someone else, I think. But
he's fighting Valentin Moldovsky, though.
Yeah.
For the interim heavyweight title. And Timothy Johnson, decent in the UFC, gets cut, gets on a bit of a run here.
Yeah.
I'm not against him if he wins this. Seeing him against Ryan Bader is a pretty interesting fight, actually.
I think so as well.
He's got a lot of power, of course, but everyone at heavyweight does, I know, but Timothy Johnson's got a lot of power. He's a good puncher. I don't know much about his opponent, so I'm going to have to side with the known fighter here, which would be Timothy Johnson.
Yeah.
It's a decent fight, though. I mean, that's obviously a consequential match because the winner is, in essence, becoming the number one contender with the guaranteed title shot whenever Ryan's done with this tournament.
Yeah. We'll see about that.
So. What about the co-headlining? We've got Liz Carmouche returning to the cage. I like seeing Liz fight. I think she's going to be in Bellator for a while. I mean, she's super tough.
She's
fighting Kana Watanabe, who's a solid fighter. But Liz is, I mean, she's a veteran. She's super strong. I'm expecting a performance where she just comes out, uses the wrestling, gets some ground and pound, possibly subs her.
I believe so as well.
Working her way towards a title shot, possibly. I don't know.
Whoa. I didn't realize that the title fight is the first interim title in Bellator history.
It is. Isn't that something?
It's interesting.
They're not like the UFC when it comes to handing these things out.
Yeah.
Which is kind of refreshing. Makes it a little more consequential than what we're used to.
Yeah. I mean, they tied it up themselves. So, I mean, they kind of have to give these guys a chance. You know what I mean? They literally made their heavyweight champion in a light heavyweight tournament. So, yeah.
Not much of a choice there.
Yeah, exactly.
How about we've got a lightweight bout this. I think it's really exciting. We've got Miles Jury versus Sidney Outlaw.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be a banger.
Yeah, I like Miles Jury better at lightweight than I did at 45.
Me too.
Yeah. He was all the way up at 70 also. I'm sorry, the other way around. 70.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, the same thing.
Not 45.
No, he's better at lightweight. He's a little tall for lightweight, yeah. But he's a little small for welterweight. Isn't that weird?
Exactly. Thing he's a tweener. I feel like he's like a 65er.
Yeah, for sure. That's a solid fight, though. Sidney Outlaw's tough. Actually, I think he gets the win here against Miles Jury.
You think so?
I think so.
I'm taking Jury.
Are you?
All just because right. I like
him. Anything else on this card that you like looking at here?
That sounds about Bellator.
It should be pretty solid overall, and we'll see what happens after the weekend, which is going to leave us with the PFL 6 card, which one thing I'm excited about on here is Anthony Pettis is finally making his return after his initial loss.
There was some worry
in the opening round
between us that we were thinking maybe he was going to be screwed for the season, but
he's still in the mix.
Still in the mix.
It would be really beneficial for him with the way their point system works if he gets a first round finish here.
Yeah, I think
that'll get him 6 points.
I was just saying that puts
him right back in the mix.
I was just saying because he only gets one more opportunity to make the playoffs after this,
right? And it would just be so shocking to me if he doesn't. At the bare minimum, make the playoffs, let alone make the finals.
I mean, he lost his first fight to Clay Collard, though. So,
Clay Collard, what a run
for
him.
He's in first place, isn't he?
Yes.
So
he's tied at first place right now. He's coming in against Marafino, who I don't know a lot about. I hope he gets the victory here. Do you know anything about Marafino, his opponent?
Not a huge, nope, not really. Is this a... is this card, which weights is it?
Okay. Well, so it's headlined by Kayla Harrison at lightweights. We've got the lightweights and the featherweights.
Yeah, but other than that, it looks like we got some heavyweights and some women's lightweights as well.
Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, we'll see.
Well, the women's lightweight headliner, we've got Kayla Harrison versus Sandy Dandois. Dandois, I can't remember how to say her name. I remember her from UFC. She made a short stint in there.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think Kayla Harrison is. There's nobody.
She's
in this
gonna
division
murder
that's
her.
Gonna
it's the equivalent of her. You know,
it's like Kayla Harrison is kind of the next one up. You know what I mean? As far as like the women's goats.
No disrespect to Cindy. She's a skilled fighter, but Kayla Harrison's on another level. She's just going to use this to build. I think she's going to repeat, go to the UFC.
Mm-hmm.
And for her to lose here, it, to me, would have to be more of a fuck up on her part.
Yeah.
And an opponent really having an extraordinary performance, which, again, no disrespect to Cindy, I just don't see that happening. Rest of the card, a bunch of names I'm not really familiar with. There comes a point with the PFL where it's just so many fighters. When you compare it, when we're talking about Bellator, we're talking about boxing, these others. So as we get into the playoffs, though, and these things sort themselves out, we're certainly going to see some of these names rise to the top, and we'll get into them then in the PFL season.
Yep. Sounds about right.
I think that wraps the show for today. Excited for next week's fights. Hope everybody is too.
Absolutely.
Hope you've enjoyed it. Hope you've enjoyed your herb that you were hopefully puffing on in a legal state while we were as well. If you're new to the show, you can catch us on KLVM Radio on Tuesdays at 3 p.m. on the West Coast, 6 p.m. in New York. We are on every podcast outlet you can think of, from Spotify to Apple to Google. We've got all that information in one handy place for you at
SwapMade.com, where you can head over there, click the gear button, support the podcast. Quick announcement, everyone. Next week, we will not have a show, but we will be featuring an interview instead of doing an episode. So definitely check that out.
Who's our interview with next week?
Oh, with Carlos Lozoya.
MMA fighter Carlos Lozoya. We are looking forward to it. Look out for that episode, and we'll catch you then.
Peace.
Later.